8:11 Thursday, time to visit with the folks from the City of Bryan. Sean Smith's here this morning as Alan's taking the week off. How are you today?
I'm doing well, sir.
Good, good. Got your Texas Red shirt on, I see. Obviously promoting that because that's coming up, isn't it?
Yes, sir. October 12th and 13th, and I wear this every day.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a good thing. And, you know, that's to promote a special event, and we have kind of a special event that happens about 12 times a year. And can we call Greta the mom of First Friday? Is that fair? Can we do that? What do you think?
Yes, I think that's fair.
That's fair. Yeah, Greta Watkins joins us this morning. How are you today?
I'm great. How are
Wonderful.
You?
Wonderful. Let's talk about, you know, when did we start this whole idea of First Friday?
First Friday started in 2006, I think.
Wow, it's been that long.
It could have been 2005.
Okay.
I didn't, yeah.
But you kind of just started this up on your own.
Right. I'd heard of the idea, you know, happening in different communities, usually in a gallery district or museum district. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of a gallery of one. So I thought, I'm just going to start this, just if it's just my place. And as I was promoting mine, I was promoting what else there was in downtown. And pretty soon it grew into a whole downtown event. So.
Now, from that first one that you had, from the initial First Friday to where it is now, just in your shop, mm-hmm. how have things necessarily changed?
Well, we can certainly pack the house on a First Friday.
Yeah.
So it's just great fun to see what it's become, where it came from, and where it is.
You have little art projects for kiddos if they bring kids around. It's a very family-friendly type of environment.
Well, it's not always kiddos that are lined up around the table with the tempera paint.
It's a good point. Good
point. At the end of the evening, it may be all college kids wrapped around that table.
And I leave early. I don't stay past 10 o'clock. I don't know. But you have live music quite often in your store.
Yeah. We usually have the house band is jazz. Mm-hmm. My husband's a jazz drummer, so that works out great.
Yeah. But it's expanded so that there are many really music venues within the downtown area.
Yeah, there are several. And Village Cafe always has a band outside, and Revolution, of course. And mm-hmm. there are several other spots around downtown where you can regularly find music out
corner
on the sidewalk.
Corner time, they usually will be people out there.
Yeah, and outside my place, too, there's a Contradiction place.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And there's a new music venue coming next month. So Grand Stafford Theater.
Oh, that's right next to the Queen, the restored Queen Theater.
Yeah, so we're excited about that.
It's hard for me to express in words what's happened to downtown Bryan because it's the evolution has been tremendous. And
it's phenomenal. The other day I watched, again, the Lyle Lovett video that was shot in downtown. It's 20 years ago, maybe 22 by now.
Right, for Front Porch.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
yeah. It's so much fun besides listening to Lyle talk, but seeing the background of downtown Bryan as he walks around downtown, it has changed.
We don't have to go far. You know, the other day I was happened to drive through Navasota, and Navasota's doing much the same thing. And mm-hmm. it's so nice to see towns of all sizes trying to grow and become something different. And we're able to have 12 different Fridays when we do this. Now, you've got a couple of Super Fridays. When do those occur?
Those are our Art Step First Fridays, which are, the last year or two, we added a third one a couple years ago. So they are March, June, and November.
Okay.
And that's every First Friday has some, arts component of it that mm-hmm. is important to us, but we step it up on those.
Yeah, I can remember, I guess, last year, the initial First Friday after students and got to A&M saw a lot of younger people there.
Yeah.
If you have a preconceived notion of what downtown Bryan is, you have to go down there on Friday night because it will change that. That's for sure.
Yeah.
So we'll enjoy that. Thanks for coming and talking about that. And, of course, obviously tomorrow is a First Friday, right?
Yes, right. And if anybody wants to see the list of what's going on, you can check out www.downtownbryan.com.
Mm-hmm.
Look on the events page or find the First Friday button. Follow those. There's also First Friday event on Facebook every month.
Okay.
So
very good.
Try to keep that info updated. Yeah. Bits and pieces roll in at the last minute.
I understand that can happen. All right. Greta Watkins, who basically kick-started First Friday, and it's tomorrow night. Thanks for being with us this
morning.
Thanks,
Scott.
You bet.
It.
News Talk 1620, WTAW. It's 8:15. Steve Ogden joins us in just a minute.
Hi, I'm Donna with the Jewelry and Coin Exchange. The price of gold is still high, and we have many customers that are coming in to sell their unwanted gold jewelry. We buy and sell gold and silver coins, one coin or entire collection. If you want to invest in gold or silver, you will find our prices are the best around. At the Jewelry and Coin Exchange, we buy gold, silver, platinum, diamonds, silver flatware, and Swiss watches. Being a full-service jewelry store allows us to pay more for your items. We are not dependent on just precious metals. Thank you for voting us the best gold and silver buyers in the Brazos Valley for another year. We hear every day how happy our customers are with us, and they appreciate our A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. The Jewelry and Coin Exchange is located at 313 College Avenue, one block off University in the IHOP Center. We are open Monday through Friday, 10 to 6. Call 846-2400 or come see us.
816, News Talk 1620, WTAW. State Senator Steve Ogden joins us this morning. How are you today?
I'm fine. Good morning.
Man, it's been a pretty interesting last 48 hours, I suppose. You've watched this for a while and been a part of the arena. What's your thoughts, first of all, on the Ted Cruz win?
Well, you know, I have a lot of thoughts, and I've been thinking about it for several days ever since the election. The first thing I'd like to say is I supported David Dewhurst, and I did that because out of a sense of loyalty. He had been good to me in the Senate. In return, that allowed me to be good to Bryan College Station. So in that context, David Dewhurst was good for Bryan College Station, I thought. But Ted Cruz ran a really interesting campaign, and I thought it was very good. You know, one of the things is you know, the question is, why was David Dewhurst running? And why was Ted Cruz running? And Ted Cruz said three things that really struck a chord, I think, here in Texas. You know, he said, politicians in both parties have failed us. We've got to stop the spending. We've got to respect the Constitution. And that message was significant. I thought, I was surprised that David Dewhurst lost by as large a margin as he did. I wasn't necessarily surprised that he lost. But I think the turning point in the campaign was that when he got tagged as the establishment candidate, I think that was the death knell, because it's very clear that the body politic out there is extraordinarily frustrated with, quote, the establishment or the incumbents in both parties. And it showed in the election results. I thought one of the interesting things was that early vote was about half of what the total vote was. In the early vote statewide, Cruz beat Dewhurst 52 to 48. On election day, Cruz beat Dewhurst 60-40. So that means in the last 2 weeks, everything that Dewhurst was doing was blowing up on him, and Dewhurst was and Cruz was doing everything right. I've never seen that kind of
Yeah, because
change.
Usually it's a true indication your early vote is going to be that. Now, one of the things that this then says is, how does this the two-party system is a gigantic ship in the ocean.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's obvious that the voters time and again, I mean, Tea Party didn't win everything, but they won a lot. Yeah. And that continues to be a message that's being sent to establishment politics, not only on the Republican side, but the Democrat side as well. It's just we happen to have all Republicans in the highest positions in office. How does the party or parties respond to this, the latest salvo from the Tea Party?
Well, the first thing you do is you recognize that in elections with the Tea Party has been a major factor in the last two elections. 2 years ago, I mean, there was a sea change in the Texas legislature. There was a sea change in the United States House of Representatives. And now, to a certain extent, there's a sea change in statewide Republican Party politics because of the Tea Party. So you've got to respect it. You've got to listen to it. And pay attention to what they're saying. Politics is not static, and events tend to drive politics. And the two events, I think, that gave rise to the Tea Party were the financial meltdown at the end of the Bush administration and the Bush administration's response, and then the election of Barack Obama. And we'll see what happens in November and with that election, and then we'll see what happens next time in the Texas legislature, because at the end of the day, there was an article in the Houston Chronicle today about how ideology trumped experience in this race. But what I continue to be concerned about is, okay, that's great, but you still got to govern. And the Texas legislature is going to have some serious problems next session, particularly with public school finance, particularly with health care, and something that you don't think about, but infrastructure funding. We're out of money in order to build highways in the state of Texas, and highways have been a tremendous economic asset and boon for our state.
Well, almost beyond out of money, you've already got billions of dollars in bonded indebtedness, too.
That's right.
So it's that and beyond. So you're right. You still have to run the government. How can this is already a pretty conservative body, the Texas House, and certainly looks like the Senate will be even more conservative. If the Tea Partiers want no taxes, nothing to happen, they've still got problems to solve. When does that realization settle down on the electorate?
Well, I think about next May, toward the end of the session, when
when you got to go into special session again and all that stuff. Yeah.
Because when you say, "Hey, none of this is going to work," well, I guess we're going to special session, and we'll see. We'll see. I think Ted Cruz, on the national level, is very talented. I think he's smart. I think he certainly has everything that would necessary to do a great job, so we'll give the guy a chance. But like I said, events will drive politics. Recent events have driven the current situation. Future events will drive the future situation.
What happens to Texas? Because you've got a governor who is someplace he doesn't want to be, a lieutenant governor who's someplace he doesn't want to be. Actually, the top six. I mean, Susan Combs, Greg Abbott, you could run the whole list. All the top statewide officers really want to be someplace else. So what's going to happen?
Well, who knows? I mean, who knows?
Let me ask specifically. Is Dewhurst weakened because of his loss? Is Perry weakened because he endorsed Dewhurst?
Yes and yes. I really, you know, we've seen politicians recover from major electoral defeats, but I would think that Lieutenant Governor Dewhurst's career as a statewide elected official is winding down. And I think Governor Perry has hurt, you know, has lost a lot of his political power and appeal because of his failed presidential bid. I don't criticize him for it because, you know, the man was in the arena and I wasn't. And you got to give him credit for trying, but the fact is he failed. And the endorsement for Dewhurst doesn't particularly pretend that he has many coattails at all. So I don't know what would happen, but I think most likely thing to happen is that the ability for the three leaders in the legislature to drive the legislature is going to be diminished. I think it's going to be very hard for Lieutenant Governor Dewhurst, Speaker Strauss, or the governor to kind of sit up there and say, this is what we're going to do.
It actually will have to be hammered out on the floor then.
I think the power now is going to shift to a certain extent, the Tea Party and the other elected members on the floor without having some sort of senior leader there driving the agenda.
Okay. Now, you mentioned the three things that we've got, and Medicaid is a problem. I want to talk public education, though, mm-hmm. right now. How is that going to be addressed differently than the way y'all battled it for session after session?
Well, I think it needs to be addressed with a constitutional amendment.
Well, you told them that, but they didn't listen to you.
Yeah, well, they will. I mean, before it's all over,
okay.
That's what's going to happen. But you've got to get the Constitution cleaned up because these battles are that we've had for 20 years revolve around what does the word basically efficient mean in the Texas Constitution? What does a free public school, what does that really mean? So you've got to clean up the Constitution, and the best way to do that is by the constitutional amendment and ask the people what kind of schools they want. You know, I think there's about 450 school districts now that are suing the state of Texas in one way or another over the constitutionality of the school finance system. It's almost certain that there's going to be some sort of court ruling directing the legislature to do something different. We don't know what. Probably what will happen is the legislature will sit on its hands waiting on the courts. Mm-hmm. So I would expect the legislature to be in session most of next year.
Margins tax still isn't fixed. That's the next thing. How will that be addressed in a different way, do you believe?
Well, the margin tax is important because it is a key component in the way we fund public education. And to the extent that it is failing to raise the kind of revenues that we predicted 4 to 5 years ago, you've got to fix it with something. And there's all sorts of ways to improve the margins tax. But once again, the smartest and the most effective way to solve it is to, in my opinion, is to amend the Constitution and either ask the voters of Texas to permit a corporate income tax or eliminate the tax in its entirety.
Why do you think, because again, this is something you've been preaching for years, what was the resistance that caused none of the initiatives that you had put forth as constitutional amendments to be out there? What has to change for those constitutional amendments to actually end up on the ballot?
Well, there is an honest disagreement of opinion, and there's a lot of, you know, legislatures and democracies are very poor at anticipating and heading off problems in advance. What democracies tend to do is address, and most of the time successfully, problems once they're laid in their lap. And so I guess the biggest reason is that since we don't have a public school finance crisis, a court threatening to shut the schools down because of the way they're funded, the easiest thing for the legislature to do is to wait. You know, I think I saw in the Houston Chronicle, yesterday, where they said the one common denominator of all politicians is cowardice. And as long as you've got politicians who are more concerned about being reelected or more concerned about running for the next office than solving the problems that we have today, you're going to get what we've got.
Steve Ogden joined us this morning. Any thoughts on what happens for Texas A&M in this next session and with possibly a more conservative elected body?
Well, I'll be surprised if the law school gets funded. But overall, I think Texas A&M is in a as good a position as any to make its case before the legislature. There continues to be a tremendous amount of tension between the legislature and higher education. You know, I saw in the paper this morning where the chancellor's talking about $100 million a program to attract all-star researchers, and you know, that certainly is good for Texas A&M. It's good for our community. Great. But in the Texas legislature, they're going to be sitting there and saying, yeah, but your tuition's still too high. And so there's going to be a continued rub between the desire for institutions of higher education to kind of build these empires and the legislature, who's just been coming out of these elections facing conservative Texans that are having a hard time making ends meet, and Tea Party Texans, and they're saying, how come my tuition is triple what it used to be? I can't afford to send my kids to college.
Right. And well, then they do. They'll come back with a fresh message from the people who either returned them to office or elected.
But I don't think A&M is a target. I mean, I think A&M is just part of the overall milieu of higher education. And in general, A&M always has as good and many times better story to tell than any other school of higher education.
That just happens to be on their wish list if they can do it. Anything else I missed that you think's important?
No, I be interested in the presidential election, obviously. And, you know, there's a couple of things that I thought were interesting. One is, you know, George W. Bush's name in the last election cycles is never mentioned, mm-hmm. which seems pretty amazing to mm-hmm. me, considering mm-hmm. what he accomplished and what he did and how popular he once was. But the 500-pound gorilla in the room that nobody is still talking about is the deficit. And how are we ever going to balance the budget? And when are we going to stop borrowing over $1 trillion every year? And I think Cruz is right. Politicians of both parties have failed us. The Democrats don't want to stop spending, and the Republicans are unwilling to look at any kind of revenue measure that would help balance the books. And so we've just got a disaster out there that nobody's paying attention to. And I would hope that as we move toward the election, somebody would start remembering what I think is the most serious problem facing our country right now, and that is these unbelievably and unsustainable deficits.
Yeah, I hear you. Thanks for the time this morning, as always.
Thank you.
All right, that's Steve Ogden, state senator, on What's Been Going On.